We do not have an agenda or outline for any of our coaching calls. This is completely Q&A, so it's up to you. So do not be shy. Just feel to unmute yourself and jump in with questions. So I am going to start my timer and I will go ahead and turn it over to you guys. What's going on? Questions, concerns? Don't be shy.
Okay. I'll start. My name is Kathy Riley, and my husband, Reg Hackshaw, is here with me. He just went to get a notepad. but we are about to adopt our Australian Labradoodle. Her name is Kara, and we're bringing her home on Saturday. And I guess I wanted to ask about, like, all the things that I'm not sure should be on her, like the tagline, the I forget what it's called, with the pheromones, that collar. What about a regular leash, a regular collar? I'm not sure how many. Here's Reg here. I'm not sure. Is she supposed to be wearing all of those together?
yeah, she's going to be like, I'm heavy. So when you are transporting her to be coming home and you're going to be stopping for potty breaks and things like that, you do want to have just a collar and a regular leash on her. Okay. Right. And the adaptal collar is an option. Yep. The adaptal collar is an option that you can have on her just to help hopefully soothe her for that transport home. You can also, if you don't want to do the collar, sometimes it can be hard to find the smaller sizes and get them fitting appropriately. And just to get them on a very wiggly baby puppy. So you could also do, they have the adaptal in kind of like a diffuser as well.
Yes, we bought that as well. We have both. We thought we'd spray the car. Can we do both, or is that overkill?
I would, just for the sake of ease of it being going to be kind of hard to get that on her and then to be fumbling to find her appropriate collar to snap a leash to, I would just go with the spray. And maybe then for the first overnight, then you can put that on her to help. So maybe it's something that you can just kind of use as needed basis and not leave it on her all the time. Might just be easier. So okay. for the transport, yes, you just want to use a collar and a regular leash. Then when you're at home is when you can have her just dragging the tagline around the house. Okay. And so then when it's time for her, she's starting to sniff, looking like she's giving indications that she needs to go out for a potty break. With that, then as you pick her up and you're carrying her to the back door for a potty break, you can be unclipping the tagline while you're going to get to the back door and clip on her regular leash.
Okay.
For a potty break. Make okay. more sense?
Yeah.
I have a question. If when we take the dog out, the tagline has to come off and that has to be replaced with the leash?
Yeah.
I
think
that's yeah. Yeah, I would, because otherwise, because when we take our potty breaks outside, we do want to have them on a leash. And that's usually the standard is a 6-foot leash. And that's just to help them focus on their chores, their task at hand of potting. And if you've got both the tagline and the leash, you're going to be, you know, you've got reins. That's going to be a lot to juggle. And usually what we're using in the house for them to be dragging around the tagline, those are only about 4 feet, generally speaking. Okay. And so what, if you took her out on the tagline, what you might be encouraging, which we don't want to do, is that she's not going to have a lot of leash length, and then she's going to start pulling on that leash, and we don't want that.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Right.
Good question, though. And you get her Saturday. How long of a drive do you have?
About 2.5 hours we're going to have. Okay.
Not too bad.
No, not too bad. We're very excited. We have other questions. We'll wait till other people go and circle back to us if we can.
Okay. Sure. Okay, what else is going on, guys? Questions?
I can go next if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead. Hi, Laura.
I have an 11-week old, I don't know, lab mix of sorts from Alabama. And I just got her 2 weeks ago. And she has started to figure out that we have windowsills and countertops and wants to eat food from the counter or try to and jump on the windowsills, et cetera. She does have a tagline on. And I think the thing that's confusing to me is I know that I gently pull up on the tagline and keep that pressure steady. What do I do though when her feet hit the floor? Do I click and treat? Do I just redirect? I don't know what I do after that point.
Good question.
The kitchen is where the good stuff is, and she's trying to get up on the counter. She will never make it, but eventually she probably will. And she does the same when she wants to take a nap. She wants to get on the couch, which I don't mind. I don't mind that she wants to get on the couch, but she's scratching at the couch to get up because she can't actually get up. So sometimes she started to sit and wait for us to pick her up, which is what I would rather.
Yeah.
So just looking for thoughts in terms of jumping up. She's super cute.
Well, good for you, Laura. Look at you. You time things well.
I've been tiring her out.
Good job. You got her all tired out so that you can talk. Very good. Okay, so great question that after we do the tagline correction, so we've given that gentle pressure and they're doing the, I don't like this, so I think I'll spit out that pant leg or I'm going to put my paws back down on the ground. We do not want to treat after that, okay? You do definitely want to acknowledge the right thing that they're doing because dogs do what works. So if they get what they want, or they get something enjoyable, they will repeat that behavior, okay? So after she puts her paws on the ground, definitely don't just kind of ignore. We do want to acknowledge that. And so I would just, you know, she's got her paws back on the ground. Good girl, that's my baby. Give her some ear love, give her some petting. Good girl. Don't give a treat. The reason being, dogs are so clever. And they are little creatures of sequences. So if we give a treat after they put paws up on the counter or pant leg in their mouth, they might inadvertently, unintentionally think that this is a dance step. This is a sequence that I put my paws up on the counter. They do this. I put my paws on the ground and then they do this and I get a treat. Okay. So don't put a treat into that equation. Definitely give her a reward of verbal praise and affection. Okay.
And then what if she turns around and just, I mean, she's just been out, keep coming back.
Yep. So, your job in that scenario, because it is going to take many repetitions, because they're not dummies. They know there's good stuff up on that kitchen counter, right? So it is going to take a lot of repetitions of this. So your job is to be more persistent and more stubborn than your puppy. Basically, it is. I keep mentioning this, but I did put a video on the Facebook page of doing tagline corrections with a puppy from my last litter who is particularly mouthy with clothing. And even in that, I think 1.5 minute video, I do the tagline correction about 5 times. And every single time my correction, how long I'm having to put pressure, is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So the more consistent you are, the faster they will learn.
And are you saying anything at the time that you're not saying anything at the time that you're putting pressure on the tagline, right?
Yep. Okay. And that's part of the beauty with it as well. because when they are doing some of those naughty puppy behaviors, if we get emotional and frustrated and irritated, a lot of times what ends up happening is we increase their arousal level. And then the biting or whatever gets more persistent and more energetic. So the nice thing with taglines is we kind of want to be almost removed from it, that the only thing that they're seeing as a sequence is this happens. And that it's almost kind of like we're devoid of the situation. So we just kind of want them to get the message of every time I do X, this happens. I don't think it's worth my while anymore. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And there was something else with the so the tagline is your training portion of keep your paws off the counter, keep your paws off the windowsill. But we also want to do some management as well. So managing is going to be kind of preventing those behaviors, and especially with countertops, preventing them from being successful and having it be rewarding. So it won't be forever, but keeping your kitchen countertops pretty barren for the next couple months is just going to be a good, you know, ounce of prevention is a pound of cure, right? So just keeping them very blank and empty. Windowsills are going to be harder, because that is usually self-reinforcing, because every time they put their paws up, they get rewarded because they can see something outside. So with us, we've kind of just let that behavior go. Mm-hmm. Because they're looking out the window at squirrels. They're looking out the window at the FedEx guy. That's normal and that's natural. Mm-hmm. And that would be a really hard battle for me to try to stop them from doing that. So that's mm-hmm. one of the, in our house, I'm like, that's a pick your battle kind of moment. Mm-hmm. And so just to prevent damage to the woodwork, that's my job of making sure their nails are done, right? And then, yeah, does the windowsills, do they have to get the paint touched up every once in a while? They do, but you know, that's okay. And there was one other thing that I'm forgetting about.
I was going to ask, I asked about the couch too, because she's figured out that she can sort of get on the couch or try to.
Yeah.
I don't mind her. I will say I personally, my husband and I don't mind that she wants to get on the couch because she sleeps like a baby. But I don't want her. I would like to get to the point where she like somehow asks us for permission or waits for us to help her on the couch or say, okay, or something, as opposed to just scratching at the couch in the current state.
Yeah. So as she matures, she's going to get more coordinated and be able to get up there by jumping and not just kind of scrambling. And so just make sure that you guys are okay with her. Make that decision now of she's going to be bigger. Are we still okay with her being on the couch? Because you can't change that rule halfway through. Okay. So as she matures, she's going to be able to get up there on her own without doing that kind of puppy scramble. In the meantime, you might want to put like a little step stool or something so that she can get up there on her own. And you don't have to be kind of helicoptering to try and lift her up. I wouldn't be so worried about her always waiting for permission to get on furniture. What seems to be more important with dogs is that whenever you ask her to get off, that she does follow through with that. Okay. And you can practice that already now of just making it a fun game of putting her on the couch and then saying off, and you clap your hands and she jumps off. Good girl. Put her up again. Off. Okay. That seems to be more important behaviorally, the off portion versus the waiting for permission to come up. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Quick writing a note about that. What else is going on, guys? Feel free to unmute yourself.
We're dealing with demand barking to go outside and play ball. We have one of those Nerf blasters, and he knows where it's kept, which is out of sight, because if it's in sight, it's nonstop. His brain will not allow him to do anything like go potty before he plays ball, which he doesn't get the Nerf blaster. Any suggestions? Because that's what he lives for.
Okay. Excellent step of keeping that out of sight. That's very, very good. Because if it's in sight and by the back door, yeah, it's not out of sight. It's not out of mind, right? Where is it out of sight, though? Is it fairly close to the back door for going out potty?
It is. I've got one of those storage benches right outside the door.
Okay. So I think part of that is the proximity, because he knows the Nerf blaster is in the box outside, and that's where you play that game outside. So you might actually want to put the Nerf blaster temporarily and let him see you do this, put it in the garage or put it in the back hall closet or something, so that it's more removed from where you play that game.
Oh, okay.
That usually will do the trick right there. Because right now he's seeing that bench, that storage box, and that's triggering him of, I know it's in there. And he has to see that bench to go out and go potty. So we have the same thing with our lunge whip that we practice, flirt pole that we practice coursing with and chasing games. And so with that, I have actually, I just had it kind of up on a hook in my training area. Nope, because that's where we play that game. So I've actually had to put it kind of around the corner in our storm shelter.
Okay.
Which, you know, they never go in there. So it's kind of removed. They're not thinking about it because they're not seeing it.
That makes sense, because he's relentless.
Yes. So try just putting it in a different storage spot. And you know the rules, of course, of that, for the demand barking before the game to start, he needs to offer you something good. And you can help him by, you know, hey, bogey sit or hand touches or spin or down, that he needs to do something that will, when his body's busy, hopefully it will keep his mouth quiet for a second. And then you can fire off the Nerf blaster only when he's quiet.
And then on the other end, when we do use it, he loves to drop it in the liriope and then shred it. And I've told him, you do that, the ball goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been consistent with that, but it hasn't really stopped the attempt.
Oh, well, and that is really hard, just because the Nerf balls are, you know, that is really satisfying for them to, you know, to destroy, and they're easy to destroy. So have you ever tried one of the Chuck It toys?
Well, actually, that's what we're using, the ball. It's not the ball he's destroying. He drops it into the liriope and then shreds the plant.
Oh. Okay. Well, and that's going to be a harder one for him to get the message, just because it's kind of, you know, that's kind of abstract in a way. So maybe you could put a panel of X-Pen or Baby Gate around that plant, just temporarily, to help break him of that habit. And, you know, for a couple weeks, and then try to slowly remove the panel. Like, you'll only fold it in half, so it's still there,
right,
but it's not completely covering the plant. And then eventually it's completely there, or completely gone, excuse me. And hopefully he's not dropping it over there anymore. I would try that, because exactly, that's a little bit more abstract for them to try and understand.
It is. And the only thing I could come up with was, oh, it goes away.
Mm-hmm. And he might not be understanding that's why the game is stopping.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. That's kind of, it kind of reminds me of like when people are trying to teach their puppies to the backyard is yours, but not this flower bed or not this garden. And dogs don't get that. So it's almost like you kind of need to do more of a visual barrier for them to, you know, get the idea. So
thanks. That makes sense.
That's funny though.
Funny boy.
Oh, Goldens and their ball games. Okay, what else is going on? I'm quick writing my notes. Feel free to unmute yourself. Hey, Nancy, you might also want to try just to help, since he's really liking the aspect of dropping his ball into something and kind of almost digging for it, kind of snuffling it out. It's fall. If you have leaves, maybe shoot it over in a pile of leaves so that he gets to snuffle around and dig it out of a pile of leaves.
Okay, great.
That might be a good way to redirect him and be glorious fun.
Yes, we have lots of leaves coming.
I figured, yeah. All right, what else is going on, guys?
Just a side note to, I think it was last week's call with the kennel cough. Mm-hmm. How long are they recommended to stay out of training or anything like that until they finish medication or if they're not symptomatic?
Oh boy. For some reason, I'm remembering 2 weeks, but I'm not sure about that, of 2 weeks after no more symptoms.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but that should be one that you could probably just Google pretty quickly and easily of figuring out the transmission and how long. I'm pretty sure with kennel cough that they can still be transmitting it even after they're asymptomatic.
Okay.
And because it's an airborne disease, of course, it's really easily transmitted.
Well, we've missed class and we'll miss it this week as well. The trainer has nationals coming up for agility. And in fairness to her, she doesn't need to have it or bring it. So.
Not on her way to Yukonuba, on her way to Florida. No, not good. I apologize. It's been a while since I've looked that up or read, but I think it is 2 weeks after symptoms. Because I know, I'm pretty sure it's 2 weeks, but I double check on that.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, what else?
Hey.
Yeah.
So Tuga has stressed adults, stressed humans, and he also has two different places where his training needs to happen. So we have a home with an X-Pen. He's pretty much confined to the kitchen, but we also take him to work where he has, I'm a custom jeweler. So he has the workshop with a fairly small enclosure, but also sometimes goes in the workshop and in the showroom, which are two different rooms. And his outside there is a, through a door, down a hall, up a stairs into a backyard, which is wonderful. It's walled, you know, he can run around. And I think maybe the biggest problem is our stress. because it's Christmas season in the jewelry store. But it's all, I think it's also the multiple locations. So he's like 3 months old, basically doing really well. When he poops in any location where he's not supposed to, it's on a pee pad. So he's at least getting there, but sometimes with no warning, or essentially no warning. So okay. That's a complicated question, but other than trying to not be stressed, what else do we do?
No, I get where you're going with this. And it does have, you know, several components going on. And hey, it's the holidays and you are busy. And you know, thankfully so. And that's just part of life for us. So I think that yes, having multiple locations does make it more challenging for puppies to understand where is my door? Where is my potty door in each of these locations? So there are definitely some things that you can be doing. So make sure that in each of kind of those three locations, that we're making sure he knows where the door to ask to go out is at, and that you're always using the same door.
Okay? I think he knows that.
Okay.
He's Marilyn Spence's puppy. Mm-hmm. And our daughter, who knows Marilyn probably better than we do, said that Marilyn uses bells. Mm-hmm. So we do have bells at each like door. Like the door from the workshop is the place you go outside at work, but you're 30, 40 feet away from the actual outside there.
Right. And that's okay. It's just, we're just talking about so that puppy understands, where is the place where I go to communicate to my people that I have a need?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and one thing that you'd said is with the pee pads. I am very hesitant. I don't care for using pee pads for a couple of reasons. Pee pads are very fabric-like, and a lot of times it is hard for puppies to differentiate between a pee pad and an area rug or a throw. Yeah.
That makes sense.
When he's in the showroom, we have a like a brown entrance mat. And mm-hmm. anytime he's in the showroom and isn't being washed, that's where he goes.
Yep.
Because it feels like outside.
And it's similar to a pee pad. Here's this yep. rectangle thing that's kind of fabric-y. So I would actually get rid of the pee pad, because kind of what you're doing is giving him a scapegoat, giving him another option. And at 3 months, yes, we still have a puppy bladder, but we want them to learn that your option, your toilet is outside. There are no other alternative options in the house. Okay.
Hey.
So that does put a little bit more heat on you guys to be really watching. Right. And so yeah. when, you know, when it's really busy in the store or et cetera, and you cannot be multitasking, that's okay. Then pop him in the X pen. And in the X pen, if you want to do a potty pan in the X pen, that's a different story, because that you're giving him an acceptable option when you cannot supervise. Okay. But otherwise, it's no, puppy, you need to start to learn to ask. Because if we think about potty training, it's not just them learning to hold it, it's them also learning how to communicate, to ask. And so, a couple thoughts with the bells. We generally actually don't recommend doing bells. And here's why. You know, if you want to still say, okay, I get it, but we like the bells, we're going to continue, go for it. But some things to consider is, it depends on the layout of your house. So in my house, our back door, which is the potty door, is down the hall around the corner in the laundry room. If a dog goes in there and they bang the bells, and I'm in the kitchen with the dishwasher running and the dryers running in the laundry room, I'm not going to hear the bells. And then I've got a puppy standing by the back door going, well, I did my job. I asked.
Okay.
And they're ignoring me. So I'm going to go on this rug. Okay. So that's one thing that can happen with Bells. The other thing that can happen is, for example, if you're traveling and you're going to stay in a hotel or at a family member's house, do you want to pack the Bells with you? Because if you don't, puppy really doesn't have, they haven't learned an alternative way to communicate. Hey, yep. I need to go potty. Okay. So what we prefer and suggest instead is that puppies learn to come find us and communicate their need. So, and puppies will have their own individual personality on this. Some puppies will start spinning in a circle. Some will whine. Some will just stare at you. Some will bark. Some will get the happy stampy feet. You know, they're going to put their own little personal touch on how they're communicating. Hey, come and let me out. Okay. So initially, they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to ask that. So we kind of are going to work on shaping that. So next time you see, puppy's starting to kind of sniff, looking like we might have a potty need, you're going to then say your command of, do you need to go outside or do you need to go potty? Whatever your cue word is. And when they look at you in response of like, yes, I do. Yes, I need to go potty. Then you are going to back up a couple steps and repeat that again. Because what that's going to elicit puppy to do is to kind of come towards you, right? So that's them. We're encouraging them to come to a human and communicate that they need to go. And then at that point, then yay, you go running together to the back door and go outside to go potty.
Cool. Okay?
All right. So I would say consider the Bells, but when you can't supervise, X-Pen. Otherwise, get rid of the pee pads because that's just giving him another alternative, and we don't want that.
I think he's really smart, and he's really trying to train us.
They do. They do. Yep. And good for you, because you're already realizing, hey, wait, who's training who? So that's half of the battle right there, recognizing that.
Well, the Bells are really great for Christmas in the shop, so it'll be fine.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll use them next year.
Okay.
Okay, yep. Thanks.
Absolutely. And Kate did it. Yeah, go ahead.
On this topic, I'm thinking about, I don't have my puppy yet. So I'm now in preparation mode. So I have the pen. I'm about to get the crate to put
in. Did you get all that?
I am curious about the need for a potty. Like, should I get I guess I don't know what you called it, but sort of like a litter box or whatever for the puppy, or should I do something like get the fresh patch, like the grass? Is that a good idea? What do you recommend for, because I'm thinking about like this idea of like, okay, inadvertently training them to do something that you don't want them to do. Like the wee pad seemed like a fine option to me, but suddenly I see how dangerous they are. So what do you recommend? Like, first of all, they need a place to pee, definitely, right? Within their contained area in the kitchen, because they have these tiny, tiny weak bladders. Uh-huh. And so, but then what do you recommend in short to supply them with in that area?
So the fresh patch, where it's either kind of the AstroTurf or it's real sod, I tried that with one litter of puppies, and here was my findings. Perfect in theory. Makes completely great sense. It's expensive. It's very heavy. You can never get it completely clean. And so then you've got a pea saturated piece of sod in your house, and it smells like a barn. So that was my findings on trying to use the fresh patch. So what we actually suggest that's in the puppy potty training modules is a potty pan, excuse me. And we do call it a litter pan or a litter box, potty box. But they're going to be a different size. If you go and buy a cat box, the edges are too deep for puppy to easily get in and out. So that will kind of inhibit or not encourage them to go in there. So what a lot of people will use is their plastic pans that are supposed to be for underneath washing machines. If you have a leak from a washing machine, those are like the perfect size because they're just the right depth. And then using pellets. Purina has a product called Second, Nancy, help me out. Second Nature, what is it called? I am completely going blank.
I've never used them.
You haven't?
No.
Second Nature.
Second Nature. Thank you. So Second Nature is just recycled paper that's making, that they make into little pellets. And those are really great because, okay, environmentally friendly, right? Because they're paper, they actually are kind of odor absorbing. And they don't, some of the other products, like some people will try wood pellets or et cetera. Well, the wood pellets, when they get soaked with urine, turn into sawdust, and that's a mess. And also a lot of times those wood pellets or either cedar shavings, they have been known to actually cause some respiratory irritation for puppies. The wood pellets, especially because they might be ground up pressure treated lumber, which that's full of formaldehyde and glue, not good. So the Second Nature is what a lot of people have found success with versus the potty pads, because the potty pads are like fabric. So we either send the wrong message or puppies just tear them up because they're jolly good fun to shred. And the main thing is not the size of their bladder, but having that potty pan option in the X-Pen is for your benefit, so that when you cannot supervise, that is kind of your scapegoat, so that puppies in their X-Pen, so they're safe and they have this potty pan option. Okay. So otherwise, if they're out, we are 100% supervising. We are not multitasking. The X-Pen is more for us and our schedule, including the potty pan that's in there. Okay. Trying to think what.
I'll go review the whole puppy module before I ask you any questions. I just need to go like do that whole module and then come back to these calls. Yeah.
It'll make more sense, but we actually don't talk about some of the products like the fresh patch and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, you will get more detail in there, but good planning ahead.
I've only just begun. I got 3 weeks to work on this, get this set up.
Yep. Read your crate training and read your potty training modules ahead of time. All right, go ahead, Kathleen.
I just want to ask a follow-up to that topic quickly. So that will not interrupt the training process to have the potty pan in the X-Pen? Like, they won't rely on that more?
Well, so like I said, it's going to be, that's for your benefit. That's your backup kind of escape hatch, right? So that when you cannot be supervising, because none of us can, we can't be supervising all the time. So when you can't, that's your kind of safety valve for chewing, for potting inappropriately. So that the potty pan's in the X-Pen only, and it's not going to be there for forever, because as you're making progress with that potty training, you know, I would say like 4 to 6 weeks, that pan should be gone, because by then they've gotten a little bit of physical maturity. Sphincter control is going to be a little bit better. They're getting a better idea of house training. So they should be holding it by then. So 4 to 6 weeks for that the potty pan should be ample amount of time for most people's schedules.
Okay. So they will still ask to go out if the potty pan is in there?
Well, you're going to be kind of watching. So when you see them in their little X pen and they're starting to circle, starting to sniff, they suddenly stop playing. If you notice, absolutely pick them up, go run outside. Okay. Okay. Initially, they're not going to be doing any asking. They have no clue. So the responsibility is completely up to us to notice the signals and to give them the opportunity. Okay. Them asking will come down the road later. Okay. All right. So yeah, to try and describe that distinction better. Maybe it's easier to think of it in pre-COVID times when most of us went to work for 8 hours a day out of the home. And so when we had new puppy, we would all come home at lunch. But to expect a puppy to hold it for 4 hours, absolutely. Of course they can't. So we're not going to put them in a crate because they pee or poop in their crate. And that is the last thing we want. So you'd put them in the X pen with a potty pan so that they had some acceptable place to go. Then you get home at lunch, you have a play date with your little puppy, you take them out to go potty, you give them lunch, you go back to work, they go back into the X pen. Okay. So that's kind of, hopefully that kind of framing helps it make a little more sense.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to quick write a note about that. And it's also going to depend on the breed too. So for bigger breed dogs, they tend to learn potty training a little bit faster. So like with my puppies, when they have gone home to their new homes, generally speaking, most of those owners did not even ever do a potty pan. It's a large breed dog. By then, they were already completely potty pan trained. And they were already kind of starting to ask. So Janelle might tell me otherwise now, since one of my puppy people is on this call. But I don't think she did a potty pan, and most of mine don't. For toy breeds, the development is slower. House training is slower. It's harder for them. And I think it's just because their physical development is slower as well. So
we have a medium-sized Australian Labradoodle. So somewhere in the middle then, I guess, right?
You should be fine. Yeah, it should go pretty quickly. Boys generally, for some reason, tend to take a little bit longer than girls.
We have a girl, so.
My experience, yeah. But I'm talking like Chihuahuas, Papillons. Some of those can be little boogers, and it takes a while to house train them. They can be a little bit more challenging.
Thank you.
Okay, and Marissa has a question from the chat box. She's read that squeaky toys might hinder the development of a soft mouth with retrievers. Can you speak to whether there's validity to this and whether squeaky or crinkly toys are detrimental to that development? Marissa, no. I mean, somebody might have had that personal experience, but generally speaking, chomping on things is just puppiness. That is part of a biological, physiological need, part of their development, that they're going to be chomping on things. The soft mouth aspect, most of the time, retrievers kind of naturally have that more than other breeds. But that is going to be kind of more of your conditioning and shaping versus what type of toys. So if you are going to be playing tug or things like that with your puppy, you definitely want to be teaching a drop it. Okay. So that they are going to, if they're starting to get really crazy out of control and not having a soft mouth, that you can have them drop the toy. Okay. And actually I'm just thinking of when I've trained my dogs for obedience and they're having to do dumbbell retrieves, And I have hounds, so retrieving is not a natural instinct for them. When I throw something, they just kind of watch it and go, huh, I guess you didn't want that. It must be worthless. I'm not chasing it then either. So teaching them a retrieve is a huge challenge. And even for them, and watching other dogs learning a dumbbell retrieve and wanting to keep that soft mouth, because it seems to be the soft mouth goes out the window with hard objects. Now that I'm thinking about it, not soft objects, because if you're starting to teach them to retrieve, like with a glove or something like that, most of the time, most dogs have a soft mouth. When you start teaching them a retrieve with a rigid plastic or metal dumbbell, that's when you start seeing dogs going and chomping it while they're bringing it back to you, which we don't want that in obedience either. So I think you're fine. I wouldn't worry about the soft toys. I think that the chomping happens more with harder toys. So hopefully that answers your question there.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Nina.
It's Nina. Well, I have a couple of things. The first thing is just a comment because of all the questions about house training tonight. Layla, as well as my previous dog who, you know, lived 15 years, they never, even though I did try to train Layla to let me know when she needs to go out, they just wait till I take them. So there's really never been an issue with them having to let me know. So I just wanted to throw that out there because that might be true for other people too, as an option that people might not have even thought was possible, but it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a really good point, Nina, because along with the house training is, you know, they're learning to not go in the house. They're learning to hold it for an undetermined amount of time until we take them out or they act. That's a lot. I mean, imagine if you started a new job and a boss put you in a cubicle and said, okay, you're going to stay here for 8 hours. I don't know when I'm going to come back and give you a bathroom break.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I actually have one of those as well, Nina. And I suddenly realized when she was about 5, I never taught her to come and ask.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So she doesn't ask. So, and for her, it's not really an issue until she gets an upset stomach.
Right. Right. Well, you know, we've had chronic GI problems. Fortunately, we seem to be getting onto a better track. Right. But she definitely, what she does is she gets very agitated and she kind of runs back and forth between the front door and the back door. So we know. And if she's in her crate, then she cries out. She barks and calls us. Perfect. So, yeah, she's worked it out.
So she's developed her own ask.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. So she's going to be 1 next week. Wow. And I know. And now we're dealing with some adolescent behavior where she has taken, she thinks it's great fun to charge at me and leap and throw herself at me. Just, it's like a greeting. It's like, you know, but she'll just come charging across the room, like, and there she is. Another thing that she's doing is, I think this is when it's called shaping, because I noticed when she was much younger that anytime I held up her leash, she would kind of crane her neck and walk towards me. So ever since she's been a puppy, I'll just hold out the collar. If I said leash, I meant collar. Mm-hmm. I hold out the collar and she walks right into it and I buckle it and we're good. We go out. But now, along with this charging and jumping on me, now what she does is she sees the collar, she stands up on her hind legs and throws herself at me. out of nowhere. I mean, she's won. She's had this mastered for months now.
She's just getting creative in her old age.
Yeah, right. And I'm out of ideas.
So I think it's just, you know, it's part of adolescence probably, of just that's when we test everything. Do we still have the same rules? Let's find out, right? That is all part of adolescence, whether it's dogs or humans. So I would say when she's doing the coming and charging at you and kind of flailing and throwing herself at you, I'm guessing, Nina, that you can probably see the preamble when she's about to gear up and do this. So to redirect her for this, I would actually, if you're sitting down, stand up. And
I'm always standing. I'm always standing when this happens.
Okay. Well, that's good. That'll make it easier. But I would say actually kind of lean your body forward and take a couple steps towards her. So what you're essentially doing there is kind of body blocking, and you're kind of getting into her space. So we've talked about this in the past, but not for a while. Dogs will do this to each other. They don't need words to control each other and their space. Right. So I used to these guys there, let's see, great grandmother. She was not a big dog, but she was so great about when we lived in Oklahoma and it would be nice out, we'd just leave the back door open. And even when she was almost 14 and pretty unsteady on her feet, that little foxy, clever minx would stand in the doorway and she'd just stand there. Mm-hmm. Because what was she doing? She's controlling access to the backyard and back in the house by just, you know, with her halo on. I'm not doing anything. Just standing here. She was body blocking. So she was controlling all that space. We can do the same thing. You're going to kind of feel a little bit silly, but like I can get a dog to move by not using my hands, not using my leash. And so you kind of want to make yourself seem larger, not intimidating, but kind of imposing. And you are just going to kind of step towards her of like, don't you do it. Don't. You get my space, I'm going to get in yours. Okay. So I would try that, because otherwise it's going to be hard for you to redirect her, you know, coming and flailing at you like a little tumbleweed. So I would try that. And with the now jumping up to get her collar on. Okay, so she's gotten creative, but it's also a little bit of demanding. So when she does the jumping up to get her collar on, do stop the world method. So you are going to take that collar and just put it behind your back and nothing's going to happen. And then she's going to get confused and be like, wait, what just happened? And she'll likely offer you a sit automatically of like,
she doesn't do that.
She doesn't do an
automatic. I am so frustrated. She does not. In fact, sit is the thing that I mentioned this maybe a month ago. I've had to go back and I don't want to like take up too much time, but I've been in a real bit of a pickle because working with the nutritionist, I have not been allowed to use anything other than the food I'm cooking for her. And it's, you know, it's a mashup of rice, chicken, and sweet potatoes. So it's not easy to use it as a treat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I try, I do my best, but I used to just always have stuff in my pockets or in a pouch. She goes on strike about sitting. She goes on strike. Like she knows I won't open the door to the crate until she sits. I won't let her out of the car until she sits. I won't let her go down the steps of the front house for a walk until she sits. And I can't tell you how many standoffs we've had. I've had to walk away from the crate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, though. I mean, she knows what she needs to do.
Yep. So it might be just part of teenage adolescence that, like you said, it is a standoff. And she's just trying to see, let's see how persistent she is. So mm-hmm. if that's what's going on, I completely agree. You're handling it the right way. Quit negotiating with her. Quit asking and repeating for a sit. Ask her once. If she doesn't do it, turn around and walk away. Stop the
world. So like, do I close the car door? Like she's sitting on the edge of the seat, waiting to jump out. Just close the door and leave her in there?
Yeah, and walk away. And you don't have to walk mm-hmm. away for that long, because usually you just close the door, walk away, and they're like, hey, wait. I'm in here. Where did you go? This is not how it's supposed to go. So yeah. even if you walk away for, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and you come back, bet you're going to get that sit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely do that of stop the world, walk away. The other thing that you could try too, is just the whole concept of working for things, that nothing in life is free. It doesn't always have to be a sit, because sit does get boring. So she can do a down, she could do bow, she could do back up, she can do spin, mm-hmm. she can do a hand touch, bonk your hands with her nose.
Right. Yeah.
So that way
doesn't matter. Uh-huh.
Right. It's kind of you're not making a pissing match out of a stupid command.
Right. I feel so stupid. Like, I want to go for this walk. Just put your little bottom on the ground and we can go.
Well, and for that too, especially if it's you're wanting to go for a walk, and chances are she'd like to go for a walk too. So she's doing this bouncing. If she doesn't do a sit, who cares? She can do something mm-hmm. else. And the uh-huh. only reason we're asking her to do something else instead is because usually when the body's busy, the mouth is quiet, but also then the paws are on the ground. Okay.
Right.
So we're just asking her to do something else to help her keep her positive. Mm. So ask her to do something else. Doesn't have to be a sit. Mm-hmm. If that does mm-hmm. not work, then do a stop the world, where you're going to take that collar, you're going to walk away, and you're going to put the collar in the closet.
Walk away.
And, we're not going to go for a walk then. And you're just going to wait a couple minutes, then come back, try it again.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was going to say, for training treats, with because of this limited diet, I'm sure that mm-hmm. personally, it's not going to matter if you take some of that cooked food that you're making for her, get an old ice cube tray, you can freeze little squares. Mm-hmm. Or you could also probably put it in the oven on a very low temperature, spread in a very thin layer, so that it's going to kind of be dehydrated, cooked for a long time.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You can cut it into little squares.
I like that.
Okay. Yeah. So
thank you.
Play around with the consistency, but you can do something so that you can make that into... practice.
I mean, that's what I've done, but it's messed. Like, that's all I can do is just throw some of it into a Ziploc and give her little bits, little pinches, but it's messy.
Then you're walking around.
And that's right. So that's why I haven't been doing it as much, but I like those ideas.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Put it in a jelly roll pan, like with some parchment paper. So you can spread it thin.
Yeah.
And in the oven, 250 for maybe 2 hours just to dry it out, then it should be, you can slice it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Sure. All right. What else is going on, guys? My timer stopped.
I have a quick question. How do you you said you recommended finding a good puppy class. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, sort of, I'm looking around and seeing what's out there. How can you tell what's the good place to go where you live?
Usually This is going to sound like an overgeneralization, but I'm sure that Nancy's going to start nodding. And I know Janelle will be nodding with me too on this. Usually it seems like if you do a Google search, what pops up for training businesses in that search is where you don't want to go. The people who spend their money on advertising and marketing aren't spending their priorities and efforts on the actual training program. Okay. So a lot of times the best is from word of mouth, recommendations from other people. And so I usually, depending on what the class is of what I'm wanting, I will kind of have a little mental checklist about what I'm wanting this class to do and check my boxes. So for puppy class, what I'm always looking for is I want to know if, is there a class syllabus? I want to know what we're going to cover. Okay. That shouldn't be a secret and a surprise every week. So I want to know if there's a class syllabus. And I want to know what's the ratio of instructors to puppies. If we've got 8 puppies and 1 instructor, or 10 puppies or 12 puppies and 1 instructor, you're not going to get any individualized attention. That's too many. Do they offer off-leash playtime for the puppies? That's important. That's a good one. And if they are, again, what's the instructor to puppy ratio? You want to be having a lot of instructors in there. Those are probably the big ones. And then the other one is, what are they encouraging you to bring? Treats and toys? That's what we want to see. If they are saying, we're going to fit your puppy for an e-collar or a prong collar, and this is our general practice for our classes, go away. Puppies should not be starting with, you know, if you have behavioral problems and issues, yes, there are an appropriate use for electronic collars and for prong collars, but to automatically start a puppy off with those is absolutely unnecessary. And the other thing too is any training business, if you ask, can I come sit in on a class before I register? Mm-hmm. They should always be happy to have you. You're not going to be able to ask questions and et cetera in class because you're just observing, but they should always be absolutely willing to have potential new students come and see for themselves. Okay. So those are kind of the good things that my little checklist of what I always look for: off-leash playtime, the instructor to puppy ratio, syllabus, and treats and toys. I want to see those things. So if you like community Facebook pages for your local community, even just throwing out the question there of like, hey, good puppy classes, and go. You'll usually get some good suggestions. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, just quick written notes. And Nancy did put in the chat box for you too, some other ideas. Thank you, Nancy. Yep, asking, if you got a local breed or kennel club. And a lot of times they have good puppy classes as well. All right, guys, what else is going on? What are we doing? I'm not sure what's going on here. Anything else, guys? Questions, concerns? Yep. And thank you, yes, Nancy, for positive reinforcement. Usually if they're encouraging you to bring treats and toys, that goes right along with positive reinforcement, but not always. All right. Are we quieting down? Do we have other questions? Okay, that's it for tonight. We can go ahead and wrap things up. So reminder that if you've got questions or concerns in between coaching calls, always feel free. You can shoot me an email. I put the email at the top of the chat box. It's puppyprogram@gooddog.com. Or questions through the Puppy Program Facebook page. That always works as well. And our next coaching call is going to be Thursday, December 2nd. And you'll be getting an email reminder the day before so that you can register for that. And just quick check in the chat box one more time. Looks like that is it. All right. Well, happy training, everyone. We'll catch you next week. Good night.